Okay, you there?
I'm here.
We are live.
Well, kind of live.
Kind of live. We are being recorded by the government.
Okay. And this is called Tuck Back a Call, I think you said? Or no, Record a Call. Tape a Call.
Tape a Call.
Tape a Call.
Although, a tape a call.
It sounds like something you take if you have a sore throat.
Or tapeworm.
Yeah, I mean, who has tapes, though? Do we really tape shit anymore?
No, I don't think. I mean, oh, we should do the disclaimer. By the way, this will have coarse language and outrageous views that you might find to be in poor taste. And if that is the case, stop listening and don't be a dummy. There you go.
I prefer to use the word crass versus coarse.
Okay, crass.
Because my profanity takes on a fine quality, not necessarily a coarse quality.
True. It's more descriptive.
I think our listeners need to know that this is a different show than they're used to. This is going to be more refined and cultured versus what they are accustomed to with the predecessors.
This is true. It's not Yosemite Sam and Foghorn Leghorn just talking to each other for no reason.
That's right.
You got two motherfuckers with a job here.
Man, and we're already like two topics deep into our agenda. We knocked out a disclaimer.
Boom.
And this is the best that they could come up with, tape a call. But okay, we'll roll with it.
Hey, you know, we're only using the tools that were supplied to us, and hopefully, you know, we can give a product that will keep one person in NorCal happy.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah,
but
so, I know most people know who you are. Do you want to give them a little quick background, and then we'll plunge through and start making fun of those idiots?
My name is Danny Stokes, and I'm a retired Army dude. I work for GORUCK as an event cadre. People in the GORUCK world know me as Cadre Daniel. I had to take on that name simply because there were a bunch of other cadres with variations of Dan, Danny, and Daniel. But I met Flash through GORUCK, working some events together, and I met Datoma, the other Datoma, out in California. Correction, I met Datoma actually in Washington State at a GORUCK Navigator event. And since then, we've done several custom events together. But that's me in a nutshell. Live in Tacoma, Washington. I got four kids. Volunteer for Operation Enduring Warrior and travel all around the country to great places such as Boston and Western Mass, et cetera.
Et cetera.
Your turn.
So I am the other Datoma, who can also be called Datoma East now that we're getting rid of the dead weight and shipping him back to the Republic of California. So I can reclaim that one. I'm Steven's younger brother, John. Got into GORUCK, obviously, because of the heir apparent himself, the Datoma of GORUCK fame. Got two kids, live in Massachusetts. I didn't leave and come back. I just stayed. Seems easier that way.
Loyalty. Yeah. I respect that.
It's a hell of a lot easier to just stick around and work shit out.
So, yeah.
That's about it.
Work
you know?
It on out.
I don't live a very exciting life. I raise kids and I go to work and that's about it. And I do some events and I like to run. I'm the opposite of most of the people who listen to this podcast. I find running very therapeutic and I like to just do it. As opposed to looking at it as a chore. So,
I feel you. I enjoy running too. So many people hate it for. I think just because they're lazy.
Well, I mean, I can see both sides of the coin. Like when I started running, you know, I was like 280 pounds. I had been dieting for like 4 months. I came down from 315 to 280, and I decided I was just going to start running. And, like, the first time I went out, it was the most awful experience I can possibly imagine.
Yeah, of course.
Now you stick with it, and before you know it, I was finding myself running without music and without headphones just because both of my kids were so young that to be outdoors and just listen to wind go through the trees for 45 minutes was like the most beautiful sound you've ever heard.
Hell yeah. Man, I never would have guessed that you weighed in at a hefty 315 before.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Was there some kind of life event that, you know, where you ballooned up like that, or were you just always kind of carrying some heavy pounds until you decided to pick up running and swim down?
I was always a heavier set kid. I was a lot more active when I was younger.
Yeah.
We used to play paintball. Our family ran a paintball field in Upton. So me and Steven both played paintball growing up. I played a lot of competitive ball. So I was more active than I was once I hit like 20 and then kind of just started living in local dive bars. That's kind of when everything went to the larger size. But, yeah, at my peak, I was about 320. And this kid I went to high school with, no rhyme or reason, you know, he was a healthy, skinny kid, had a son, just died one day, just dropped, you know. And he had some small medical issues here and there, but nothing that would have led anybody to believe that that could happen. And when that happened, it was like a light switch went off in my head. You know, I have two small kids at home. I got a mortgage. I got a wife. And that was it. That was, the turning point.
A little wake-up call.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you got to think about other people than yourself. And it takes something to trigger inside of you. And I hope to God, everyone out there finds it at some point, and it doesn't have to be a tragedy for them to do so, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But the reality is sometimes people got to hit a rock bottom kind of moment before it rattles them enough to make an actual change in their lifestyle or behavior. But,
yeah.
Oh, man, that sucks that your buddy died, but you made something positive out of it.
Yeah, There's always another way to look at things, and it was a tragedy. But you know, his wife is insanely strong, and she's raising their son, and she's an amazing person, and
it's awesome.
There it is.
Hey man, you probably told me before, so forgive me. I must have forgot. But what is it that you do? What's your profession now?
I run a service department for the Nikon microscope dealership in the New England area.
A service department? You guys, like, fix microscopes and shit?
Yep. So a microscope can be anything from, say, like, a small student-style microscope that you would sell to a high school all the way up to, like, a half or three-quarter million-dollar system that could fill an entire room, you know, and everything you can imagine in between. And microscopes, you know, we use the car analogy a lot. Microscopes are a lot like cars. They require preventative maintenance. They require annual maintenance. And if you ignore that maintenance, you'll find yourself dead on the side of the road. And, you know, so a lot of people don't think about it, but it's something where anything with a lot of moving parts that you depend on a daily basis, you should probably look into making sure that you're getting something done proactively to it rather than waiting until there's a problem and being sitting there, you know, with idle hands.
Yeah. Is that the same company as the cameras?
Yeah. So Nikon cameras is their consumer camera division. It's the same mother company, but, or I should say the same thing, you know, a corporation.
Yeah.
But the microscopy line is just a different division.
Oh, but they're great. Now you're throwing big words out there.
You're the one who asked about work. I was going to just swear and talk about whiskey. And
all right. What am I thinking? Let's get back to the fun stuff. Microscopy. That sounds like a medical procedure, kind of along with your tapacol.
Tapacol worms. I'm losing pounds like you read about. Oh, God. So, yeah. So those two jokers can't apparently put together 60 minutes in a day to talk to each other anymore, which is hilarious. I could see how they wouldn't have a lot of free time where Steven is driving across the country shortly.
Well, you know, I'm just happy that they have a couple of friends like me and like you that can pick up the slack when they drop the responsibility ball to their audience, to their listeners. I mean, that's a pretty shitty thing to do. You start this podcast, people are listening to it, they're depending on the material, it's enriching their lives, and then they just pop smoke, bounce, disappear, and ninja out of there?
Yeah,
I mean, good thing we're here, right? Holy shit.
Drop the ball, kick it into your own goal, and then start celebrating. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I do. I was telling Steven the other day, I said, one of the things I'm going to say is that Flash should already start stockpiling white suits with the little tiny black bow tie, and that motherfucker, when he becomes a lawyer, better be dressed up as Colonel Sanders and sound like Foghorn Leghorn every time he walks into a Southern courthouse. I don't care what he's arguing, but he better kick those doors in and say, I say, please refer to General Law 62. I mean, I'd hire him.
Yeah. And he needs his cane so he can do his temp walk.
Yep. He's got to dye his hair blaze white and look like one of those actors portraying the colonel in all the commercials and just get it done.
He would willingly do that. Flash is forever playing dress up. He's always putting on suits and tuxes and top hats and shit like that.
Anything to pass the time, I guess.
I think he just played with dolls when he was a kid, so this is the adult version of that.
Yeah, probably ripped the heads off and buried them someplace.
Yeah.
I think I watched an after school special that was slightly creepy like that.
That is sort of creepy.
Oh God. Yes. So yeah. So he's driving back cross country. The other Detoma, the now less handsome Detoma, is now driving cross country again. Because apparently, when you're moving from California to Massachusetts, you don't look at an almanac or a calendar, or I don't know, the weather. It's always good to move to New England in say September or October, and then have a good wallop of winter right away when you haven't had one in 15 years. You want to make sure you bury yourself with that right away.
Yeah, that was poor planning.
Yeah, I didn't think about that too much. And, of course, you know, we get hit with what was the coldest winter for the last, like, 30 years. The first year they're back.
Yeah. Yeah, Mother Nature was pissed off at New England, that's for sure.
She was. And I'm stupid enough to keep signing up for these fucking March events with you people.
Yeah, that St. Patty's Tough and Light was nipply.
So my first event ever was the 2017 St. Patrick's Day Tough in Boston. Steven and Big Chris from NorCal flew out, and it was like the weather was a perfect mirror of this year. It was cold as shit. It snowed like 3 days before the event, and overnight, it was just raw, you know? And part of me was like, well, that's not going to happen again. Last year was terrible. Of course we'll do the St. Pat's Tough Light. Sure enough, here you go. Oh, I said, I'm done. I'm done with winter events. If it's not summer, if I'm not sweating and getting heat stroke, I'm not doing them.
Getting heat stroke. Yeah, there's something about the combination of cold air and wind in Boston that just makes it really miserable, but it's Boston. So everybody wants to be in Boston on St. Patty. Celebrate with the Irish. Although, we didn't do much. This year's St. Patrick's Tough and Light, it was difficult to keep a St. Patrick's theme just because there wasn't much evidence of St. Patty's celebration or Irish community out on the streets.
Yeah, that was, you know, I don't ever go in Boston typically. I go in there for work all the time. So I'm a sit in the backyard next to a campfire person. I don't like to go into the city and you know, I do that for work. But to go into St. Patrick's Day, to go into Boston on St. Patrick's Day in South Boston and not see almost anybody was completely fucking outside of the norm of what I thought. I'm like,
yeah, that was me too.
What the hell is happening? Like, no one is celebrating, or the bars are so packed and they're not allowed to go outside.
Yeah. They're not allowed to go. Yeah.
But yeah, that
it was bizarre.
Right.
But that's okay. We were upholding the tradition.
We were, and that was, yeah. I got to tell you, that tough class was probably. I mean, I haven't done as many events as some other people, like, you know, Captain Other Datoma there. But that tough class was probably one of the best events I've ever done, and it was awesome. It was just talk about everybody getting their shit together mentally and being like, oh, yeah, all right, no lollygaggers, everybody kind of sharing the load. And, you know, even when you hit that, like, oh, we got tired moment, and, oh, God, we're starting to slip up a little bit, like, it didn't last long, and everybody kind of snapped out of it at the same time. That was like, does that ever get frustrating from you because you want to put a serious beat down on some people, but it's like, hey, this class actually gets it, and shit.
Well, you know what's interesting from my perspective as the, you know, cadre leader of the event is the go-ruck classes that have the most trouble that never come to a point where there's cohesion and you know, a healthy dose of teamwork and just sucking it up and getting the mission done. The classes that struggle are the ones that you're too easy on them in the beginning. Like, if there's not a significant amount of pain and suffering, like, during the first half of the event, for some reason, that class will just never gel.
Mm.
And you would think it's, you know, you would think, well, you take it easy on them, and that way they, you know, conserve their strength, and then they'll be able to operate better, you know, when they hit that dark hour right before sunrise or whatever. But that's not a fact. Like, you got to kick that team in the nuts, and then some magic happens when they're under a log or under something heavy, and it's pretty incredible to watch.
Yeah,
but. Now, having said that, I don't intentionally ever mean to go easy on a class, but, you know, sometimes there's just things that happen out of your control where you might not get an opportunity to push them to their limits quite yet, and then suddenly they're bickering at each other, and tempers are flaring, and they're complaining about shit. But that class of yours, and we started there in South Boston on the beach, and we went over to the memorial and then out to Castle Island. That class was, they were tight. You guys did well.
Yeah, it reminded me, you know, because I did my first event in Boston, and that was, you know, it was a fun class. That was Shredder and Cleve did that one. And then I went out to, California, and I did the NorCal exit party that Stephen threw, his custom.
Yeah.
And who was it? Flash and Mickey and who was the third one? We had a seal.
Was it Brett?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Brett. Brett Vernon. Yeah.
Yep. So it was those three. And, like, that NorCal group is exactly kind of like what we saw with that Boston group. You know, like, everybody does so many events together, and they all know each other, and they're busting balls, but they're getting things done, and they're, you know, I was like, oh, man, this is night and day. It's like, well, you know, it probably didn't help that it was a custom and everybody there was, you know, had done all these things. They'd done his Steven's Vikings events, you know, and stuff like that. But that was like the wake-up call, like, holy crap, like, you can really kick some serious ass when everybody's paying attention.
yeah, you're right. It's incredible to see what a go-ruck class is able to accomplish. And on the other hand, you know, there's some classes. Dude, you want to hear about a class that almost failed at a tough challenge?
Oh.
I mean, so I'm going to talk shit for a second, and if any of these guys are listening, just know that I'm going to build you back up in the end, because we ended on a very positive note. But for a minute in this class, I had never seen this happen before at a go-ruck event. I had 14 people all at once decide to quit. simply because they didn't want to get in a body of water.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. So a couple of weeks ago, I was leading a custom tough challenge for a fraternity in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And this fraternity was exploring alternate means to conduct their pledging process because they had had some issues with hazing and they were put on some kind of a probation or suspension. So the idea was maybe they could use a GORUCK style initiation for their new pledges in upcoming years rather than putting them through like a traditional fraternity rush or whatever they call it. So anyway, we got 21 people in the class, right?
Okay.
Middle of the night, it's snowing outside. It's about 45 degrees or so. So it's a cold night, but not like dangerously cold.
Yeah.
So we come up to this little lake that I had planned for the route. My intent was to do, you know, 10 minutes of water PT, and then we get out of the water, and then we were going to haul ass to my next checkpoint, and I figured that fast movement coming out of the water would warm everybody up, dry their clothing, we'd be good to go. So
yeah.
we get to the lake, and as we're approaching it, I make the comment, hey, you guys ever go swimming in the snow? I don't think that went over too well. So I had everybody get shoulder to shoulder on the shore of the lake, and I'm like, all right, boys, follow me, and I waded into the water. So it's pitch black. I had turned my headlamp off, and I get out into the water myself. I'm about, I don't know, waist deep, like almost chest deep, and I turn around, and like only a couple guys followed me. I'm like, what the? So I thought maybe they didn't hear me or something. So I'm like, hey, enter the water. Well, nobody's taking a step toward the water at all. They're just frozen, like on the side of this lake. So I really was puzzled for a second. And one of the fraternity young men said, oh, such and such can't get in the water because he's over here shivering and freezing. And I'm like, okay, well, the rest of y'all get in the water. So I exited the water, went over to check on this one guy, and he was having some kind of an anxiety attack. He was sitting by this tree. There was another guy kneeling down next to him, and he was visibly, like, shivering to death. Not to death, but shivering like crazy. And so I talked to him, hey, man, what's wrong? Are you okay? And he said, yeah, he wasn't feeling too good. He'd been throwing up earlier. And I felt his skin. He was warm. Like he was, his lips were not blue. His fingernails were not blue. He was totally fine. He was just having some kind of a panic attack. So I'm like, all right, you're just going to sit this one out. And then he had a buddy there taking care of him. I'm like, you stay with him. Just make sure he doesn't get worse. Everybody else in the water. So I waded into the water again, right?
But I didn't finish the water twice.
So, again, like, nobody follows me. And somebody else, like, pipes up and said, yeah, we're not getting in the water. It's too cold out here. So I'm like, hey, stop talking. This isn't a discussion. I'm not going to argue. You guys have been instructed to get in the water. Now, enter the water. Well, still, nobody's getting in the water. So now it's been a couple of deliberate minutes where, obviously, these participants are refusing to comply for some reason. And I really can't figure out why. The water was actually warmer than the air. I mean, it felt nice to be in the water. It wasn't like ice water. Anyway, I'm like, hey, what's going on here? And so I turn my light on to see who is actually in the water with me. There's four men standing there in the water. All four of them are guys from F3 who came to sort of chaperone the event. And they were all connected with this fraternity. And so the F3 men had entered the water with me, but it was the fraternity students that refused to get in the water. So once I saw that it was the F3 guys that had the courage and the loyalty and the resolve, you know, to get in the water and just go with whatever's coming their way, Then I started to kind of berate the other guys for their lack of courage and their lack of metal. Because it really kind of ticked me off, you know.
See if you start going in, you start to jackhammer, and then you're making excuses. But to just stand there and blatantly just, no, not happening. Like, what a fucking dick move.
Yeah, so by now it's been a couple of minutes, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know how I'm going to compel these guys to enter the water, and I can't go back now. It's like trying to discipline a kid. You know, if you change your resolve, so I can't go back and tell these guys, like, okay, well, we'll just move on to the next thing. That's okay. Well, if I did that, then I'd lost all credibility as the event leader and as their cadre, right? So they pretty much backed me into a corner. Like, I have to enforce this evolution or else, like, I suck as a cadre. So my choices are to, you know, use physical force, which I'm never going to do at a GORUCK event, you know. Like, I'm not going to push anybody into the water. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Or I just consider that as a voluntary withdrawal. You know, if you don't comply with the instructions, that's pretty much quitting.
Yeah.
So
you have given up. Where's your taxi money? Get the fuck out of here.
Exactly. But if I had 14 guys at once just quit, you know, if I dropped all of them for a voluntary withdrawal, then I kind of fail as a cadre again, because this is a custom event specifically for these guys. So I'm like, my wheels are turning. I got to figure out a way to motivate them. So as a last ditch, like, Hail Mary effort, I had been yelling at them because I was pretty upset. And so I decided to soften my tone a little bit. And I said, look, guys, just think about tomorrow night after you finish this event and you're sitting back at the frat house, you're sitting at a bar, and you're talking to your little hotties about how tough you are because you finished this event and you got in the water during a snowstorm and you complied with this crazy Green Beret's instructions, and think about all the pussy you're going to get. Well, that connected with at least one of them, because one of them kind of approached the shore, then another one, and it was kind of like the trickle effect. They slowly all managed to get into the water.
Oh, yeah. A little lemming situation. Like, well, if Jim did it, maybe I can do it. Oh.
Yeah. So in the end, we all got in the water. We did some squats. We did some lunges. We splashed around a little bit. We got out of the water. We picked up, the sick boy shivering by the tree. We moved out, put him under a log. They clicked, had an awesome event. By index, they're trying to figure out how they can bring this style of event to the rest of their fraternity, like 80 other members, 80 other brothers that they want to get a taste of it. But the whole takeaway for me was knowing exactly what would be the motivator to get them to do something that they didn't want to do.
Yeah, to a bunch of college kids, how do I motivate you? You can shotgun Natty Ice out of the ass crack of the sorority girls in 6 hours.
And I found out later, one of them we were doing like a little after action review at the end of the event, things we could do better or things that went well. And one of them said that he was glad that nobody decided to leave at the middle of the event, because they had pre-planned to all leave at once. They were only going to do like half the event and then just bounce. And of course, I didn't know that. So I think that's what was about to happen at that lakeside. I think that was about to be the trigger point for them to say, like, yeah, we're out of here, peace, and then roll. Thankfully, they didn't do that. And by sticking around and completing the event, they obviously earned their GORUCK tough patch. And, you know, they had that cohesion, that bonding, and potentially a way to initiate future fraternity brothers into their organization. So it was all a success, a win-win, but never before in my GORUCK career had I seen something like that. It was definitely a new one for me.
Yeah, that's crazy. I can't even fathom, you know, what's going through your head as like a, how the fuck do I deal with this? You know, it's just, especially standing in the water being like, hello, I'm in the fucking water. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. And the truth was, it was the fear of the unknown. Like, these guys had no clue what we were going to do in the water. If I was going to tell them to swim across the lake, or if they were going to have to be submerged, or that, I think that was part of the issue, is they had never done an event before. They didn't know the extent of the water evolutions. And also, I don't think they quite had trust in me yet. You know, they didn't think I had their safety in mind and their best interest. And, of course, you know, they're young. They haven't done endurance events like this before. If it was unsafe, I obviously wouldn't put them in the water. The whole reason I was in the water myself is so I can figure out, like, you know, how much exposure can we absorb safely before we got to dry off and get moving.
Yeah, but, lead by example, which is, you know, if you're up there and, you know, you're on the shore saying, no, I can't get in there because I'm going to die of frostbite, you know. It's hard to say that to someone who's standing in a fucking lake.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you actually hit the nail on the head. That whole lead by example is what we were trying to convey to these. These were all leaders within the fraternity. And part of the problem with this hazing culture in the Greek system is that you get, like, upperclassmen that are forcing their pledges to do things that they are not doing themselves. So that's like the opposite of leading by example. So yeah. part of the theme of this GORUCK event was, hey, if you're gonna initiate new fraternity members, you gotta be under that log with them, or you gotta be in that water with them, or you gotta be doing flutter kicks at the same time. Like, do that shit with them, and that's what it's all about. It's not you barking orders at somebody else and then because you won't get their respect, and that's just not how we effectively lead.
Yeah, you never look with enduring eyes at the person who's hitting you. You know? You're never like, oh, God, you know what I miss is when that guy beat the shit out of me with the paddle after making me eat that fucking pile of shaving cream. I really wish he was around right now.
Yeah.
Well, the first time I got wet in an event, I was in the back of a rental van and Jude pissed on us.
Wow.
Yeah, that was that fucking, Pop and Smoke party. I always forget the name of it. The NorCal Exit Party.
The Exit Party. Was that the one where he was, like, trying to do Morse code with the taillight and he, like, yanked the wires out of the van or some shit?
Oh, yeah. We were – that was a wild – that situation was absolutely hilarious. You know, so they – most of the people listening to this were there. But, you know, they put these white sacks over our heads and they put us nut to butt in three rental vans, and there's like 80 people.
White sack.
Jammed, and not like a box van. We're talking like, you know, like a one step up from a minivan, like an E350 Ford style van.
Yeah.
So we are jammed in there. And, you know, one of the NorCal kids, one of the NorCal guys, I should say, you know, we're like halfway on our way to Cupertino. We have no idea where we're going. He starts getting a leg cramp. His leg just turns into a 2x4, and it starts, like, stabbing people in the entire van, and everyone's just like, who's elbowing me? It's like, I can't stop. I'm fucking cramping up. And then Jude's like, well, I just took a piss. And everyone's like, yeah, you're funny, Jude. And he's like, no, I am not kidding. And the dude next to him's like, is that what that is? Am I sitting in your piss? What the fuck?
I love it, man.
Yeah, they had this soundtrack that the cadre and Steven cooked up, and it was like seven sounds. It was, you know, Flash screaming, keep your fucking head down, and then like, I think Flash was screaming, shut the fuck up. Mickey was screaming, keep your fucking head down. It was a baby crying, a metronome, you know, like a bunch of just random sounds that lasted on loop the entire time we rode out to Cupertino just to fuck with us. And that's when Jude was like, oh, you're going to fuck with me? I got something to fuck with you. And he just rips the fucking connector for the brake lights out, and he starts tapping Morse code while they're driving, and they have no idea he's doing it. So we're on the highway going over the mountain, and Jude's back there like, SOS, SOS.
That's good.
Yeah, that was fun.
Jude's a survivor. He used to be an Army helicopter pilot, so he's trying to use his evasion skills to – was probably not even a necessity to, you know, fish yourself. He just did it because, you know, when else would you be able to get away with that?
Yeah. It was the end of the event. They fucking patched everybody out. We're standing on the beach, and he goes, one more time for old time's sake, and he just pisses his pants on the beach. And he's like, I'll just go in the ocean. It's fine.
when you first said he pissed on you, I'm imagining him, like, just standing up in the van, whipping his shit out, and just, like, hosing everybody down.
Yeah. I don't think that would have gone over nearly as well.
Yeah, that probably would have been a fight if that happened.
Right. But yeah, it was. That event was actually the first event that I went in the ocean, because, you know, I did the Boston event out here, and Shredder and Cleve marches right down to the edge of the fucking water, and they're like, take your gloves off, you know, and it's like 20 degrees, and everyone takes their gloves off and they put them in the water, and, you know, you're touching the Boston Atlantic Ocean in fucking, you know, early March on a 20 degree night. You put your hand in and you just immediately get carpal tunnel. It's like your hand just turns into a claw. There's nothing you can do about it. And they're like, you get two options. You can go in the water or you can fucking run until you puke. And I've never seen a line of people who are wearing, like, running suck T-shirts and I don't run from anything immediately become marathoners. They're like, fucking A, right, let's do this. We're on it. Let's run. I love running. Oh. Yeah. So, obviously, they didn't dip us in that event. We went out to California. And I was like, woo, California in June. Oh, no, it was July. California in July, first event. Yes, finally, warm weather. It was fucking 50-something degrees during the day, and then it got to be like 45 at night. And everyone's like, well, your brother doesn't like being cold. I'm like, it has nothing to do with the fact that I don't want to be cold. It's fucking California, and it's fucking July. Why am I in a sweatshirt? What the fuck is going on here? Why did I fly out here?
Yeah, that's NorCal for you. But, yeah, the Northern Pacific Ocean, man, is like 52 degrees year-round, so you never get warm water. It's always going to be miserable getting in that.
Yeah, and I was just, you know, it was fine. We did the event, you know, we finished. It was great. It was a fun time, but I was just, you know, I was dumbfounded. I'm like, where do I have to go? Do I have to go to Arizona? Do I have to go to, like, Vegas? Like, where the fuck do I have to go to have an event where I can wear a pair of shorts? I see all these people doing fucking events in silkies. I'm like, where the fuck are these events?
Well, if you want to do a silky event, you could probably go to Flash's bedroom.
This is, oh, I have a special pair of silkies for that event. They're crotchless.
Yeah, the best kind.
It's just an elastic band I put around. It's kind of like a flag football belt, but it's really just for show.
Now, speaking of silkies, I was working this an OEW booth last weekend down in Charlotte at Tuckfest.
Yeah.
And we were selling some merchandise with, like, the OEW logo on it, and we had some silky shorts sitting out on the table. And so this guy comes over. He's looking at him. He's like, yeah, I think I want to buy a pair of these silky shorts. And I was like, okay, but, you know, first thing you do when you buy these, you got to cut the liner out of those, man. True Ranger doesn't wear silky with a liner. And he's looking at me like I was crazy. And I was just kidding around. I mean, I do cut the liners out of mine, but I don't expect the general public to do that. You know, like,
yeah, I enjoy the tip of my penis falling out of them, which is kind of
Yeah, especially if you hike them up real high. You know, then you can get like the wiener shaft going out one side, and then the ball bag going out the other side, and I mean, it's a party.
What you just described is every single time someone says silkies, I view that image, but it's Matt Andrus.
This sexy beard.
He's like, yeah, you want these abs? Watch my nuts fall out. You're like, God damn it again.
Man, the worst. Have you ever seen? So, have you seen the shorts that the Navy wears? The UDT shorts. These little, they're like tan cotton shorts that are shorter than Ranger panties.
Yeah, they look almost like BDUs, but they're like booty shorts.
Yeah, little booty shorts. They got like a little two-loop metal buckle with this, this like belt strap that you cinch through there. And I never understood what's the point of those shorts, but yeah, you definitely get some brain hanging out when you wear those bad boys.
We got to switch topics because I can only get so erect.
Okay. Yeah. Are you? Yeah. We gotta keep our wits about us.
I can only get so erect. I have a funny story about not Ranger panties, but booty shorts. So last year in January, me and my wife went on what we called our last vacation without the kids. We had we called in, you know, all the grandmothers and all the grandfathers, and you know, all their my sister-in-law, because Stephen was still out in NorCal at the time. And, you know, they came out for the week, and they stayed with the kids and watched the kids. And me and my wife took a cruise with seven other couples that were all kind of, you know, we were all super close. And as you have children and you grow older, it's just natural. You don't see each other as much as you do. So we booked this giant cruise, the ultimate bottomless alcohol package. You know, we all got these balcony suites. And on the Royal Caribbean ships, you can they have dividing doors on all the suites, so you can open them up. So we had seven rooms in a straight line, and we opened up all the doors. We had like a bowling alley on the side of the ship.
Awesome.
It was really a good time. But our first stop was Nassau in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And we get off, and, you know, we're walking around the shops, and I see they have like this captain's hat. And, you know, the guy's like, oh, $10, my friend. I'm like, I have a $5. He's like, oh, you know, $8. I have a family to feed. I was like, I don't need a captain's hat. I have $5. If you would like this $5, I will wear a captain's hat. So I end up with the captain's hat, and we're going, you know, we're looking for a place to grab some drinks. We have all day at this port, and there's a Senor Frogs. And I'm like, now, we went to Senor Frogs in Puerto Rico, and it was fucking awful. I mean, Puerto Rico is, you know, a part of the United States, so it's not like drinking at a Senor Frogs in the Bahamas, which I learned by going to Senor Frogs. So I was dragged into the Senor Frogs, and I'm like, you know, begrudgingly like, ah, God, the fucking last time I was here, I dropped like $200, and I wasn't even drunk. I just had heartburn from all the fucking sour mix. I could have digested a fucking handful of roofing nails. You know, it's like it wasn't a good time. Well, this Senor Frogs in the Bahamas isn't bad. We walk through the door. The first thing is a guy in a fucking cowboy hat with bandoliers, and the bandoliers have fucking liquor bottles in them. We walk through the door. He just immediately grabs me by the back of the head, tilts my head back, and fills my mouth with, like, a lemon drop shot. And then he just walks away, and I was like, all right, fair enough. I'm kind of down with this. It was the shit, you know, like cheap, giant drinks loaded with booze. They had these, like, they were running these, like, they have, like, the master of ceremony guy with the club horn, you know, like, burr, 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 who wants to do a chugging contest? And, you know, they line up, like, five people, and they see how fast you can chug a Bahama Mama, just 151-proof rum in there, and it's just, you know. So we left in the place, and I was lubricated. Quite lubricated. So we're walking back to the ship, and we go into a souvenir store because, you know, some people want to buy some stuff. Right out front, they have a giant thing of women's, like, booty shorts. Like, the cotton, I put these on over my bikini to go to and from the beach, bikini shorts. And at this point in my life, you know, having lost, like, 110 pounds, I enjoy showing flesh that I did not enjoy showing when I was a lot heavier.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're joking around, and I grab a pair of medium female booty shorts, and I go into the room. And I put them on, no underwear, just slide them on. And I come out of the room, and my buddies almost shit their pants laughing. I'm like, I took my underwear off, and I put these on, so I have to buy them because I'm just rubbing my dick all over these things. So I go walking up to the cash register, and they're like, yes, sir. I was like, I need to purchase these. And they're like, what? And I point down, and, like, they started taking pictures with me because now I'm wearing a captain's hat, a pair of female medium booty shorts, and a T-shirt that says, I'll blow this guy to get back on something. It was like an offensive T-shirt with an arrow pointing in one direction that I bought for, like, you know, a dollar. And I come walking out of the store, and my wife takes one look at me and just walks away. And I was like, oh, maybe this wasn't thought out very well. But I walked from the souvenir shop, like, 3/4 of a mile back to the ship, went through ship security in pretty much, like, painted on shorts and a T-shirt that says, you know, like, I'll blow this guy in a captain's hat. And, my God, you have never seen looks like you get when people are just staring at the outline of your penis and balls. for the entire time that you're like in a security line. Oh, it was great.
And it all started with the guy putting his hand on the back of your head, tipping you backwards, and putting something in your mouth that spreads down your throat.
I mean, most of my stories start that way. And they're going,
yeah.
But so fast forward, like 3 months later, my wife's doing laundry, and she washes a load of laundry, and she finds this pair of fucking red booty shorts, and she's like, what the fuck are these? And I was like, oh, those are mine. And she goes,
she's like, who is she?
You fucking pig. I was like, no, those are the ones that I bought drunk in the Bahamas. And she's like, oh, God.
You're like, no, really?
Yeah, she knew the second that she looked, she flipped them over. They have like the big "I got laid in Nassau" button or whatever on the ass cheek, and it's like, oh.
Probably peeked inside and saw a nice, healthy skid mark. She's like, oh yeah, these are yours.
Oh yeah, you. You were wondering why I was fast walking back to the boat.
The gotta poop walk.
Yeah, gotta poop, gotta poop, gotta poop, gotta poop. To my. My old man is like my old man after doing his light challenge with you and Black Dog is all about posting on the cuff page now.
I noticed that.
Brother, I think it drives my brother slightly insane, but he posted a picture of him. He works out with our other buddy Monk. He was the other kid who came out and did the light with us. It was his first event too.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them, they work out 3 days a week. They meet like in the morning, and they go on like a 3.5 mile ruck every morning, three times a week in Worcester. They do it, so they've been doing that pretty steadily along, which is good. They both, you know, it's helping both of them out a lot. But he posted a picture of them yesterday, and he's like puffing it up this hill, and it looks like he's running, and he's like, "Go ruck tough," you know, like hashtag get it done, hashtag look at me run, hashtag old man on the move. And I just, without even thinking about it, responded, he had to poop.
Exactly.
That man would walk away from a grizzly bear. He doesn't like to run. All right, he has to take shit.
That's awesome, man.
Random fact. Oh, random fact time. Irish whiskey was actually invented by the Dutch, and it was left behind as a spoil of war in Ireland after the Ireland-Dutch Revolutionary War of 1754. Google it.
Huh. Well, we got us a regular Paul Blart Mall Cop with his fun fact.
There it is. We said fun fact. It's Wednesday. You need facts. We got them. And don't bother fact-checking it because, believe me, we already have.
Wow, that came out of nowhere, a little whiskey fact. Here's a little liquor fact for you. You know, I thought we're supposed to be drinking during this, so when we first connected, I poured a cup of coffee, and I got a bottle of Tito's vodka on top of my fridge, so I'm like, well, there's no beer in the house. Why not? So I poured a shot into my coffee and forgot. And so just a second ago, while you were telling your booty short story, I picked up my coffee mug and took a big swill, and I'm like, man, that tastes weird. What the hell is with this coffee? I totally forgot I put vodka in it. Yeah, that'll get your attention.
I think so. I'm sitting in a parking lot because I wasn't going to do what those two jokers do and drive around so that, you know, it sounds like Max Headroom is arguing with somebody who has a terrible cell phone from the, you know, like the 80s. Yeah. Oh, I got a really important point to make about, and then we get to this. And you're like, great, I guess we didn't need that part of the story, Flash. That's great, thank you.
I think he does that on purpose.
But so, I'm sitting in this car, and I'm like, oh, no, I had to go someplace where I could be quiet and swear. But the Bruins played their game 7 last night, so I went up to my buddy's house and proceeded to taste test a couple different styles of beer to make sure that they hadn't spoiled and were still safe for human consumption.
Yeah.
So I think I'm sweating that back into my system because the more we talk, I'm getting a little loopy myself. Yeah, I forgot we were doing this when I was drinking last night. It was like midnight, and I'm like, all right, well, you probably just have one more beer, and then I was like, ah, crap, wait a minute. I got something to do tomorrow. And he's like, yeah, we're all going to work. I said, that work doesn't count. I called in. That's shit I got to do.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah. And there it is. So, Tacoma, Washington, that is in relation to, I'm trying to think, how far away from Seattle is Tacoma?
About a 30-minute drive.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah,
pretty close. Seattle's right up the road.
I almost signed up for a marathon that's put on. You ever see the comic strip, The Oatmeal?
No.
They make this guy, David something Inman. He writes he does comic strips in there. They're usually quite hilarious because they're very inappropriate. And he writes a lot of them about his dog. He has a book out and it's why my dog is an absolute asshole. it's his outlook on the world is very funny. And so he hosts a marathon because he's another guy who lost a ton of weight by running. And he wrote a book called the Beautiful and Awful Reasons Why I Hate or Love Distance Running. And I actually read it when I started to run, because there's a hilarious thing about it where it's he looks like a sloth and he's laying on the couch and he has a jar of Nutella and he's finishing a jar of Nutella with a spoon, and his wife comes in and she's like, "Are you eating a jar of Nutella with a spoon?" And he's like, "I ran 20 miles and said, hey, leave me alone. I can eat whatever I want." And his whole outlook is, he's like, "I'm still a fat kid in a skinnier kid's body. So I run 20 miles so I can eat a pizza that I roll up to look like a taco." But he hosts a marathon in Seattle, outside of Seattle, in some giant wooded park area. And I almost flew out for it, but it just wasn't in the cards last year.
Huh. I wonder what race that is. I don't think I've heard of that one.
It is the Beat the Blurch Half and Full Marathon.
Beat the Blurch.
Yeah, so one of his things is the blurch, which is the sound that a squeezed ketchup bottle makes when it has nothing in it, that sound. He calls that the blurch, and he draws this little floating fat chubby thing with sweatbands that follows him around whenever he's running.
Yeah.
And he's like, so whenever I'm running, I'm always trying to beat the blurch. I'm trying to stay away from this blurch. And the blurch always tells me to eat more snacks and not move. It's like, yeah, you could go for a run. But you know what's better than running? Is sitting in that comfortable couch over there and eating this giant bag of potato chips and drinking all that soda. That's more fun than running. So he's always trying to outrun this little asshole who's trying to tell him to just eat like shit.
Wow, he sounds like a pretty creative dude.
Yeah, his comics are pretty funny. But in the marathon, so they have a full marathon that they run, and guys dress up in blurch costumes and chase you and try to get you to eat cake. So they, chase you down with Little Debbie cakes and force you, here you go, eat it, eat this Little Debbie cake. You know you want it.
Little Debbies are good.
They are. Little Debbies are good.
Wow. Well, if you decide to do that next year, let me know, man. I'll run it with you, and you got a place to crash here with me at in the Tacoma house.
Hell yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Beat the Blurch. Yeah, sounds pretty fun.
It sounds like – it's like every single year I have something I want to do, and then I derail myself from doing it. So this year, on a whim – so we did the Tough Light with you and Black Dog, and we met a bunch of new friends there, Maddie the future Marine.
Yeah.
And
she was badass.
Yeah, a bunch of cool fucking people from that event that we hooked up with. So I saw that she joined the lottery to get a number for the Marine Corps Marathon. And I was like, huh. So I look up the Marine Corps Marathon, and I'm like, wow, that's fucking awesome. Marines everywhere. You run around all the national monuments. You start and stop in Arlington. I'm like, wow, this is fucking cool. So I threw an application in to get a lottery number. I was like, whatever. Probably won't get one, but if I do, I do. Boom. Of course I get a number. I'm like, holy shit. So,
did you? Awesome.
Yeah, so I'm actually running the Newport Full Marathon in Newport, Rhode Island in Columbus Day weekend in October. And then I run the Marine Corps Marathon 3 weeks later in Arlington, Virginia.
What's the date on that again?
It's the 28th.
October. That was October?
Yeah.
Maybe I can get a an OEW team together for that.
You, I think you already have enough people, because I know Andy got a number. A bunch of people from around here got a number. Remember Brian Beer Ruck Taylor came out and did the city tour with us?
Yeah.
He got a number. There's a couple other people. I think like five or six people from this area that we've done Go Ruck events with already have numbers for that marathon. Oh, including Maddie the Marine.
Cool. It is a really good event. The Marines are very good at hosting things like that. It's super well organized, very professional. They have at least two Marines standing at every mile marker for the entire route, and, you know, in uniform, basically, you know, greeting people and cheering them on and helping them out if needed. They have a blue mile section, which is pretty amazing, you know, memorial set up like every, 50 feet or so, if I remember right.
Yeah.
The whole, and plus you're in D.C., you know, so everywhere you look, there's history. It's kind of like rolling through Boston, you know, there's just, it's a history-rich environment. And that was, I've only done it once, and it was a couple years ago. I rucked it with a couple of buddies from the Summit Project, and we carried tribute stones in our rucks. And then every mile we would stop, pull our tribute stone out, which has the name of a fallen soldier from the state of Maine, and we would just find a random person, a spectator or another runner or somebody, and so at every mile we would share their story, and it was really, really cool, man. It took us a really long time because we stopped every mile and talked for like 5 or 10 minutes, but
then
we didn't do the math on that and realize how long that was going to delay us. We almost missed the cutoff time to get across the
bridge.
Is it the Key Bridge? Whatever the bridge is, I can't remember the name of it. It goes back across to Arlington. We almost missed the cutoff because we were telling so many stories along the way. But man, it is a really good event, really good route. So I'm happy you're going to do it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm wicked excited about it. It sounds odd to hear people say this, but I've never been to Washington, D.C., even on a school trip, because it was like the week that my school – so we moved once when we were kids. Stephen and I moved from, you know, like a small town, Ashland, that's along the Boston Marathon route, and we moved out to Upton, which is where we were raised – where we finished growing up, I should say. And that transition from moving from Ashland to our new house in Upton – the school I was leaving in Ashland was taking their Washington, D.C. trip when I moved. And when I got to my new school, that Washington, D.C. trip had just happened. So I was like, no, what the fuck? You know, so I missed out on both of the trips in both schools for the trip down to, like, Washington, D.C. to the museums and stuff. And then I just never had a chance to get down there for one reason or another. So it's really... You know, we got hotel rooms. I'm going to go down for a couple of days. My old man's coming down, so he's wicked excited to come and spend some time around that. You know, he's very happy to be around a bunch of Marines, and you know, it'll be a good little event. I'm looking very much forward to it.
That's great. I love that city. DC is awesome.
Yeah, I like the fact that it runs you around a bunch of the monuments, too, because, like I said, having never been there, I was like, sweet! I could actually, like, take in the city, spend a couple days down there, and on top of that, you know, run a marathon.
Yeah.
Oh, you go run people. That means running without a backpack and trying to do it for time without drinking.
Yeah. Yeah, all of that kind of goes against the Go-Ruck culture, so I think you lost them.
Heads are popping left and right. They're like, what if that fucking does not compute?
But hey, let me tell you about this other event. It is a rucking event. There is drinking along the way, and it does go through D.C. and ends at Arlington. Have you ever heard of 60 to 60, A Ruck to Remember?
No.
It's a Memorial Day weekend event. It starts in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. The first 15 miles are on the Appalachian Trail, You come down off of that, rush through the Virginia countryside, and get bused closer to the D.C. area. You stop and camp at two firehouses along the way, and then the final miles are through the monument area and then ending at the gate of Arlington National Cemetery at 8 a.m. on Memorial Day when they open the cemetery. And then the final mile is to Section 60 of Arlington, which is where most of the global war on terrorism casualties are laid to rest. So it's a 60-mile movement finishing at Section 60. All along the way, you stop and tell stories of valor. So every participant, either somebody that you've known or somebody that you do some research on, but you get a biography of somebody that passed away in the military service, and then you share their story to the rest of the group. But, man, what a fun and meaningful event that is, a ruck to remember.
That sounds awesome.
It is. Yeah, it's definitely a good one. I'm going to miss it this year, but I did it last year. Andy was there, too. You mentioned her. We were on the same team with some other OEW folk. But, yeah, it's just it's cool. Really cool.
Yeah, there's no shortage of fucking cool shit to do all over the country, I'll tell you. And the more, you know, the more you open, you broaden your horizons and you look around and you say to yourself, oh, you know, I'll look at this and I'll look at that, the more you realize, wow, there's just a ton of cool shit. Such as the City Tour Ruck. That's coming back around.
Yeah, man. Yeah, the City Ruck Tour stop number one is happening this weekend in Lansing, Michigan. I'll be kicking off the tour there right on the heels of a GORUCK event. I have a GORUCK event in Toledo, Ohio, with Cadre Shredder and Cadre Mocha Mike.
Oh.
And, yeah, it's going to be awesome. We got like 100 F3 dudes. We're going to put them through an event we call a GORUCK. And it's going to be pretty epic. But then leaving there, heading up to Lansing, the capital of Michigan, for the opener of the City Ruck Tour. And then the very next night, which is a Monday, incredibly, normally we don't schedule these on weekdays, but April 30th in Bay City, Michigan. And right now I'm holding up my hand as a mitten and I'm pointing to the armpit of my thumb. That's where Bay City is. And if you've ever been around Michiganders, that's how they always tell you where they're from. They show you the mitt. Anyway.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, Bay City, a relatively small town, and they asked for an additional stop on the Ruck Tour. So I'm going there. They already have like 40-some tickets sold for this event.
No shit.
Yeah, man. And this is like a Monday night. We're going to do like a 10-mile ruck. We've invited local police agencies out. We're going to hit a couple of significant landmarks in the town, and then hit a couple of, or at least one brewery at the end for some liquid libation. But that'll be stop number two on the Ruck Tour. Then stop number three is out in Colorado Springs. I'm not leading this one. My OEW teammate, Jonathan Lopez, will be leading that one. And then another teammate, Kelly McAnally, they put the plan together for that. And that's right on the eve of a big Spartan event that's at Fort Carson, Colorado. Spartan is doing this military honor series this year. Then on the May 11th, stop number four will be back in Washington State where I live, and it's going to be a 50-miler. We're actually going to ruck from SeaTac Airport all the way to the State Capitol building in Olympia, Washington, 50 miles. Yeah. We're going to take 24 hours to do it. Like I said, we're inviting all the local police agencies to come get some. And a little bit different than last year's theme, you know, when you joined up in Boston, the whole concept was, benefiting Operation Enduring Warrior, which is a nonprofit that helps wounded veterans, disabled veterans. And this year, we have stood up a new program that's focused on helping police, specifically injured police that are, you know, suffering from not only physical injuries, but more prominent are psychological type issues, injuries. So to get them active, you know, get them doing physical challenges where we work together as a team to achieve it, and basically just show support, gratitude, and respect for the police population, because that is drastically lacking in this country. We're trying to turn the tide of that sentiment.
You ain't fucking kidding.
Yeah. So this movement is called Task Force Sentinel, or TFS. And Task Force Sentinel is going to post up in like 61 cities across America this year. And so those first four I mentioned are what we're doing right out of the gate within the next 2 weeks.
Sweet.
Yeah, man. It's awesome. It's really, it's a need. It's a dire need that our police officers need. There's not many organizations out there that help police in distress. And unfortunately, suicide is just an epidemic right now among the police community. And not only that, but, you know, police are just getting gunned down left and right, murdered, you know. So we're trying to give them some relief, give them some support.
Yeah, we just had, the kid on the Cape that was, the officer on the Cape that was killed, you know, I think he was a father of two or three, you know, just going to serve a warrant, guy up in a crawl space, just shooting down blindly, clips him, and that was it. And it was like, it was terrible. You know, it's just gut-wrenching.
Yeah, some bullshit. It needs to stop. And so hopefully this movement kind of gets the pendulum swinging the other way. And so anybody that wants to get in on this, come to one of the city rough tour stops and get involved, because we need the support. The police need the support. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, these events are not like GORUCK events. So there's no there's no water PT. There's no carrying logs and welcome parties. The city rough tour events are more about, you know, fellowshipping, having some drinks along the way, maybe if you like that kind of thing, paying respect to the veterans, cops, and then we end on the state capitol building steps with a circle of trust, some hugs, and you get a patch.
Yeah, the one we did last year in Boston was out of sight. I was like, you know, I don't know what I was expecting, because, you know, as with most things, Stephen doesn't give you a lot of information. He just says, sign up for this. We're going to do this. And I'm like, and I'm like, I guess we're going to go do a shitload of beating up, and we're going to, you know, I was envisioning probably what Shredder was putting them through on the Go Rev Heavy, you know, weeks ago when we were on the battle trail. And I was like, no, this is significantly better. We're just cruising along and covering some ground, doing a little PT, having some beers and bullshitting. This is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the whole idea, you know, I changed the way that we lead these events and run these events just because so many people get intimidated by what happens at GORUCK. And I just wanted to be able to reach a larger audience. And for all the GRTs out there, you know, if you want a GORUCK style event, well, then just sign up for that. Just do GORUCK. But
all
for the 20, city ruck.
All 24 of those GRTs listening.
Yes. There's that many? Yeah, probably not.
There will be. We are going to crush this thing, losers with their poor grammar and their dick
well,
joke.
We got to, I don't know, we might have to change our approach, because here we've been talking about, like, positive, uplifting things. I'm like, totally bogarting the airtime with a public service announcement about Task Force Sentinel, and we haven't really discussed much irreverent topics specific to Flash and Steven, so
this is true.
What's wrong with us? We're trying to be all like.
I mean, it's where the conversation leads itself. You know, we're just bullshitting.
That's true. Yeah, we're just bullshitting. Yeah.
And it's certain. You know, there's certainly things that you know, you want to get the word out, but you know, anyone who's listening to this obviously is listening because of a connection with you, a connection with Flash, a connection with Tacoma. You know, and so they're almost going to expect that there'll be conversations like this, and who knows, maybe some of them, I don't know, who wouldn't know that you're doing a Capitol Ruck tour or, you know, any other things with OEW. If they are, they're like an ostrich with their head in the sand, but, you know. Or they haven't met you. They're like, Danny, I don't know. And he looks, he's intimidating. I don't want to do an event with him.
Yeah, right. Speaking of intimidating, what's up with Steven's ear surgery? Is he getting them danglers snipped or what?
He did when he went. Yeah.
You already did?
Yeah, he went out to. They all went out for a reunion.
Uh huh.
Some of us have to stay home and, you know, be adults. But so he hop, skipped, and a jump down to Texas, and he did the reunion event, and he was fucking
in Austin
down there. Yeah, and he has a boy. You know, he has a good friend down there, who owns a piercing studio, and he had his long and dangles snipped, and they cut off the excess skin and they kind of suture it up, and he posted a picture, and I said, look at those little tiny elf ears. Is it weird that he looks more strange to me now than he did 10 minutes ago?
Oh wow! No, that's not strange. I can totally picture that. I didn't realize he had it done already. That's pretty cool. So I'm sure it's still healing up then, right?
Yeah. I think he had it done like less than a week ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you want to see what they look like, or what he had for lunch, or how he worked out today, or anything else that he posts on Instagram, like a 16-year-old girl with a new cell phone, you can go on Instagram and see, because he posted a picture.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I'm not much of an Instagram guy. I really haven't figured out that app yet, but I'll see if I can.
I'm doing it for you, and me, and other people.
Wow, so now is he going to start over and gauge those bad boys out? Is that
no? I don't think so.
That would be funny though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
How many times could you stretch your earlobe?
You have no idea the toll that your body takes by reversing a vasectomy and then having another vasectomy. Yeah, it was he was obviously down at the event, and Heather, his wife, came over to the house for dinner, and I had sent him a message because my son went, you know, my 4-year-old son, who's a chip off the old Tacoma block, ran full tilt into a door frame this weekend and got his first stitches in his head.
Oh, damn. Sounds like he had a bleeder.
Oh, yeah, he's fine. You know, my wife called me at work, and she's like, he ran into a door frame, and he split his head open. I was like, send me a picture. She sent me a picture. I'm like, yeah, it's going to need a couple stitches. It's no big deal, you know. And it wasn't. The hospitals nowadays, when I was a kid, I remember smacking into shit and cutting myself open. And then the fucking doctor comes in, and they're sticking a needle with Novocaine into the cut, you know.
Yeah.
Like, into the open wound, they're putting a needle, and they're, like, injecting it in there. And I was like, all right. So I'm, like, trying to pep talk the wife, you know, and I'm like, all right, listen, they're going to stick a needle into this cut. He's going to scream like they're ripping his face off. And we're going to have to pin him down and hold him while they sew up his head. And I couldn't have been more wrong if I tried.
I got some Star Trek Spock-looking device that, like, seals it up and cauterizes all at once.
I mean, nowadays, so we go into the room, and they have this, like, gel, and they're like, oh, it's like lidocaine, novocaine, every other cane you can think of, and they squirt this gel into the cut, and they put a Band-Aid on it. They're like, we'll be back in 30 minutes. They come back in 30 minutes, and the doctor just, like, pokes him right in the cut. Tap. My son doesn't even blink. And he's like, okay. Threw 3 stitches, and we are out the door. I was like, what the fuck was that shit when I was a kid?
Wow.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I literally scared my wife like I was telling her a campfire ghost story, because she thought we were going to, like, buckle him down like a serial killer and put, like, a spit mask on him, and the doctors were going to, like, you know, whip a devil out of a crack in his head. And it literally, they put some goo on it, wait 30 minutes, sew him up, and he's out the door. I was just like, Jesus.
Oh, that's good for him.
But the whole thing was, I sent him a message, and I said, oh, Jacob wants to be cool like Uncle Steven. When my brother was, how old is he? My mother tells the story all the time. He was either like 4 or 5. He went face first into a glass coffee table, and that's that scar he has in between his eyes.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. So I was like, he wants to be cool like Uncle Steven and have a facial scar. Yarr.
Dang. Sounds like he almost could have blinded himself with that little stunt.
Yeah, we are, depending on how you look at it, the luckiest sons of bitches on the planet or the unluckiest. Like, Steven and I have never broken a bone, knock on wood. But we've been sewn up like ragdolls.
Like ragdolls.
Yeah. And now, yeah, he's doing it on his own for shits and giggles.
Self-inflicted.
Self-inflicted wounds. But it's good. I mean, he was talking about closing up his ears for a long time because, you know, obviously he's not going to stop doing these GORUCK events. And the last thing you want is to tell him to get on that log. And then he comes up and he's like, we got a problem. I don't have half my ear. Like, you know, something catches that loose floppy skin, and next thing you know, he's bleeding out of the side of his head.
Yeah, that would be shitty.
That would not be a good. That would not be a good 2 o'clock in the morning situation.
Nope.
Although you could just heat up a spade shovel, real fucking hot, and cauterize that ear, and let's keep moving.
I put some 100 mile an hour tape on it. That'd be good.
Yeah. We when we were doing last year's tough in Boston for St. Patrick's Day. Shredder and Cleve have us carrying a park bench, you know. So there's like a group in the back of the line, and we're moving through Dorchester, and this group of people has a park bench up on their shoulders, and they're walking with it. And, like, one person hit some ice or something happened, and, like, the park bench shifted, and it caught one of the women who was in the course, who was doing the class, right above the eye and just opened her up. And,
damn.
Yeah, it wasn't big, but it was, you know, like an inch above the eye. Just perfect timing, you know, just pop, and it just started bleeding. And there was an Army medic. What's his name? Oh, God. Talk about them all the time. Anyway, so there was an Army medic and a couple of the, paramedics there, and they're doing like the super glue surgery on the side of the road at like 2 o'clock in the morning in Dorchester. And you're good. All right, you're good. Let's keep moving.
Ah.
And I said, that's why, you know, at the beginning of the class, they ask if anybody is a paramedic or if anybody has medical training, because shit happens sometimes.
Yeah, that's not the preferred technique, the super glue thing. That hurts like hell, but I guess it'll hold in a pinch.
Yeah. When you have nothing, super glue is the best.
Yeah.
Oy, oy, oy. Hey, we've been going for about an hour and 22 minutes.
Damn.
We are so much better than those losers.
Yeah, we have better lasting power, I think, than they have.
Because we do endurance events. We don't just sit around and drink and talk about how heavy the log was.
Exactly.
Well, cool. You want to call it here, and we'll save some in case we have to fill in for these losers again?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to kind of sing our own praises for a second, because for our inaugural event, you know, we had some pretty good subject matter. Maybe we didn't reach quite the devious level of hilarity, but this was our opener, so, you know, gotta warm up to it.
You gotta learn how to use the tapeworm app, and you gotta make sure that, I mean, who knows, we could have been talking this entire time and it wasn't recording, and they're gonna be like, where's the podcast? And I'll be like, oh, that app sucks.
Oh, man. Dude, you know what that just reminded me of? So when I was in the Army, we had to take this, we did some training on photography, and this was like back before digital photography was really prevalent. And so we learned how to do low light and no light still photography. And basically you have to set up a camera and leave the shutter open for like 3 hours to get enough ambient light to actually, you know, make your photograph. So one night I stayed up all night. This was on a duty day, like a duty night. So I had to be at work in the morning for PT. I stayed up all night, and I caught, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 photographs. And this was supposed to be for my course assignment. I have forgot to put the damn film in the camera. So I was like, I had to redo it. I couldn't believe it, man. Save all night for nothing.
Yeah, you know, like, and that was, we have one of the salespeople at our company, because microscopy is actually very close to photography. You know, you're using focal length, different lenses, there's apertures, there's, you know, all these things. So a lot of times people with a photography background are very good microscopists. And one of the guys at our company has a photography degree that he got from the Rhode Island School of Design. And he loves to talk shop. And I mean, so here I am with, like, my Nikon digital camera, and I'm showing him, like, oh, yeah, you know, if I'm in a low-light situation, I just bump up the ISO with this dial here, and then I can adjust, you know, my aperture and my shutter speed, and I can, you know, sometimes I just put it on program auto, and the computer, you know, like, the computer chip in this camera does it all, and he just looks at me like I just slapped his mother in the face. And I'm like, what? And he goes, I used to have to fucking carry 7 different rolls of film, and every roll of film was a different fucking ISO. He's like, if I took a picture, I had to guess if it was right. I don't just get to look on the back of the screen. I mean, he was, like, visibly angry at technology because he learned how to take photos in, like, you know, the 70s. And he was like, you're just cheating. That's all cheating. Fuck that device. I'm like, whoa, all right, cool. So,
wow. Angry.
It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But that's what it is, you know. You get set in your ways, and I will say, I don't care what you do. I don't care how well of a, how, you know, much time and money you have invested. You will always get a better picture from film. And that's just it. I don't know.
Yeah, I believe you. It's kind of a lost art, though, or a fading art, just being able to. Because not all, I mean, with film, there's not only the artistic side of capturing the image, but also on how you develop that image. You know, like, you can take the same shot and have 20 different effects depending on how you cook that image and what paper you put it on and how long you, you know, different effects. So
yeah,
not a lot of people get into that anymore. It's a good hobby, though.
Yeah. If you like huffing chemicals in your basement, it's right up your alley.
Oh, yeah, in the dark.
I like red lights, I like huffing chemicals, and God damn it, I like doing it in silkies with no liner.
Yeah, definitely no liner.
Yeah, no liner, come on.
Well, hopefully Flash and the other Datoma have approve of this recording, and I'll just wrap up my side of it. John, with you know, your brother obviously is a heavy hitter within the GRT community. So many people love and respect him. He's brought so many people together, hundreds of people together, you know, with his custom events, and that's something to be proud of. And you know, seeing him and you patch your dad after that GORUCK light there at RX Strength, man, that was a special moment. It really was meaningful. So you guys continue what you're doing. Flash, that crazy motherfucker, he's my brother. I consider him family. I would do anything for him. And so the least thing I could do is tag in for an hour of conversation on his behalf while he's out doing. Actually, what the hell is he doing? I don't even know why he's not on here, but.
He said he had to finish school. That cuts back to the small town pizza lawyer that he's trying to get the degree in.
He's been using that excuse for like a year now. School this, school that. But actually, you know, to his credit, even before he retired from the Marine Corps, we'd be at events, GORUCK events, and he would like pull away to hop on his laptop and knock out an online assignment. He's definitely a dedicated student. So if he says he's working on school and he's got requirements, that's absolutely what he's doing. I definitely don't have the scholarly discipline that he has. But he's getting after it, man. He's making things happen, and he wants to use his law degree for good, you know, for kind of like pro bono veteran type issues. So I think it's amazing what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I have very little exposure to him, but every time I've spent with him, you know, which was only that one time out in California, but he was definitely cool shit, you know, good dude to be around. And I know that him and Steven are very close. And, you know, it seems that the more and more time you spend around the GoRuck community, the more and more you realize that no matter how intimidated or weird the people are, everybody is just a fucking good dude to be around, or a good, you know, like a strong woman, or just, you know, everybody is cool. I have not bumped into one person who sucks and I don't want to be around. It's just, you know, and you're right. You know, you, connecting people like me and you, I never would have met you in my entire life if he had not dragged me out to go to St. Pat's a year plus ago, you know?
Yeah.
It's awesome, you know? It's a definitely a kick-ass community to be a part of, so.
Hell yeah.
That's the heartfelt shit. and for all we know, Flash is probably soaking in those fucking Epsom salts, farting in the bathtub and laughing about it right now, so.
Probably so.
I hope he listens to this while he's taking a bath, and I hope he spit takes when we say that.
I think he'll probably listen to this while he's on the shitter, if I know him.
Oh, God, that story he told about shitting his pants. I was like, I have nightmares like that, like waking up and just having a fucking hot load in the dump. You're like, oh, no, what happened? Boom. All right, well, hey, that's content. They're going to enjoy it or they won't. So we'll either do it again or we won't. We'll play it by ear.
Yeah. Play it by ear. Next time we'll take some questions from our listeners, or maybe like have some folks call in and add to the mix.
Yeah, we'll see what G has to say about it. I'm hoping that we get some positive gifts from G. That's all I want out of this podcast.
Yeah, right. That would be cool. That would be cool.
All right. Well, you finish your Tito's Handmade Vodka Coffee, made right there in Austin. And I'll go back to work.
All right. Hey, stay in touch, brother. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Good talking to you.